Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, a weekly podcast where I walk you through some of the wildest, most unbelievable stories you'll hear from the world of real estate. If you like real estate and you love crazy, this is a podcast for you.
Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Lee Brown, and you're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, where we try to talk about as many different things unrelated to HGTV as we can possibly find. And today, you're going to hear something that is crazy and fairly heartbreaking, too, because crazy is not just things we laugh about like the naked people. It's also just the things that we manage in real estate that are completely unexpected. And so today, you get to meet an awesome realtor in Ohio by the name of Brian Witta. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Lee. I'm excited to talk to you.
So tell all the listeners where you're located in Ohio, how long you've been in the business, those little tidbits.
Well, I am in Findlay, Ohio, which is in the northwest corner of the state. We're kind of between Toledo and Columbus. We are the top micropolitan in the U.S. for the third year in a row, so we're all pretty excited about that. I have been in real estate. I got my license in 2005, and I've only been full-time for the last 3 years. So I'm fairly new full time.
Well, we'll just call that new-ish.
Yes.
For newer. Yes. But before we do go any further, I need you to tell me, I've not ever actually heard the term micropolitan. So tell me what makes it micropolitan besides the fact that Findlay is tiny.
Well, we are, yes, it's a population factor, and we are not tied to a metropolitan area like Toledo or Columbus or some of the bigger areas within the city. So it's actually a honor it's bestowed upon the city by Site Selection Magazine. So they look at growth projects over the last year, and we are the world headquarters of Marathon Petroleum, Cooper Tire. We have the largest dishwasher manufacturing plant with Whirlpool in the United States. So it's a big area for growth. We have we're our own little bubble. It's a really cool area.
Well, that's kind of fascinating, and it's another magazine I never had heard of and wouldn't have had a reason to know of Site Selection Magazine, but being a big nerd, I'm totally going to go look that up and learn about somebody else's stuff.
You should.
Okay, so with that being said, you've got something to share about life in real estate, and there's only two ground rules of the podcast, and you might be familiar as a subscriber. If anybody's new, the two ground rules are no F-bombs, GDs, or see you next Tuesday, because I really don't like the hateful words, but other salty ones just don't bother me at all. And the other one is please don't use real names without permission, especially when they're guilty parties that are in the wrong, because we'd like them to have to identify their own bad behavior. So with that being said, tell us what happened and listeners, y'all need to listen and think about how you can take care of people around you, because Brian's got something you need to know.
So Bob, who was a family friend, had approached me with some real estate questions. And I went over to his house, met him and his wife, Mary, and the discussion ended up surrounding the sale of their home, which was a little bit surprising to me. I didn't expect it to go there. And they brought up their intentions of purchasing a condo. Bob had some medical issues, and the staircase in the home was presenting a serious risk for him, so they needed something on one floor plan. Mary was pretty adamant from the beginning that she would only move for the right condo. It had to be a certain size, certain features, perfectly understandable. They were both nearly 80 years old, and that was a pretty big commitment for them, you know, at that point in their life. The first day we had their house on the market, we had 5 showings, ended up with multiple interested parties. One agent pretty quickly submitted an offer that exceeded their list price, and we got through inspection and all those sort of things. Appraisal came in kind of low, and they had decided at one point they were no longer going to sell. They weren't going to move forward. So they had a condo in mind that they wanted to look at, and they were pretty heartbroken that they weren't going to be able to make this sale go through. And we did a lot of back and forth, a lot of counseling, as we all do, and trying to keep in mind that this really was the right thing for him. This is what he needed. And so the other agent that brought the buyer and I had ended up negotiating our own commission to take a reduction to help with closing costs. And we got real creative. We made it work and we got the sale to go through. The condo that they were going to buy The seller of that condo decided that they were not going to pay a realtor. It was for sale by owner. They were not going to pay me. They thought they could do it on their own. You know, that's all well and good. And we needed to have the proceeds from the sale of their house to complete that purchase. It was a piece of what they were going to use to make that sale. So they decided that they wanted to pay me. Bob and Mary agreed they were going to pay me if they ended up purchasing that condo. So great. You know, we get an offer together. We get it accepted. We now have their current home under contract. We have their condo under contract. So we fast forward up to closing, and we sit down to the closing table for their home. We're selling their home now, and their condo is going to close 2 days later. And the title office, some folks say you're in escrow. We use different terms here, but the title office here is where you would go to close a deal in Ohio. So, you know, I had received the closing disclosure from the title office, obviously before the closing, and gone through the numbers with Bob and Mary. They were in agreement that that all looked correct. And we had joked about the big old check that they would get at closing, which was nearly $100,000. So it's not exactly chump change. That's that's a big amount for anybody.
And it's what they have in the world, right? When you're 80, it's not like you're going to go out and make a bunch more money. What you got is what you got.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when we got to the closing table, the attorney began to go through the closing disclosure. And he mentions to Bob and Mary that he says something to the effect of, well, you know, I've got your account information to wire your proceeds to you. And Bob and Mary didn't really react to that, but it piqued my radar. And I interrupted the attorney as I'm looking at Bob and Mary, and I'm asking the attorney as I'm looking at them, why would you wire the proceeds? We should be getting a check today. The intent all along was that there would be time for that check to clear. Bob had intended to leave there, go to the bank and deposit, knowing this was Wednesday, knowing that on Friday we would close on their condo, and that should be enough time, according to his bank, for him to draw the check to make the purchase for the condo. So the attorney kind of, and I'm not bashing him, but he kind of glazed over my question and began to explain the benefits of having the proceeds wired instead of, I guess, addressing it. And he did such a good job of explaining it that Bob and Mary ended up agreeing to have the proceeds wired to their account, and at one point pulled out a deposit slip with their account number and the routing number and gave it to them for the file. So again, this was Wednesday, and we were set to close on their condo on Friday. So at 9 a.m. the next morning on Thursday, Bob calls me, and he was very concerned because the proceeds were not yet in his account. So at that point, I figured he didn't quite understand the time frame for how wires go through. And I explained to him that due to the time of day that we closed on Wednesday, it probably hadn't gone out yet, but the title office assured us that it should go out that day. And so he continued to check his account every hour, and he contacted me again at 11 o'clock and said he still didn't have it yet. So I said, I'll tell you what, if you don't have it by noon, call me back, and I'm going to call over to the title office and find out what's going on. Well, I didn't hear from him at noon, so I thought maybe things were okay, and I was with another client, so I couldn't directly pick up the phone and call him. 2 o'clock rolls around, and he calls me in a panic because the bank says the money still hasn't arrived. Well, of course, 2 o'clock is the cutoff for a wire to go through, so if it hadn't already gone through, now we're in a pickle. So I went into full-blown Papa Bear mode at that point, and I called the owner of the title office to find out what in the heck was going on, because foreseeably there's not a reason why he shouldn't have had it at that point in time if they had sent it out in the morning, unless something went wrong. So the owner got on the phone, told her what was going on, and she advised me that the wire had already been made to the account number that Bob provided in his email the day before.
Oh, not the slip handed at the table?
Yeah, so screech and break sound. And I kind of said, wait a minute, what email are you talking about? So the owner read me the email And it provided an account number at one of those big banks, the one that has the Stagecoach in the logo. And the owner tells me the address, the names of the parties involved, the loan number, the dollar amount, the exact dollar amount that should have been in check form the day before it closing. And I asked her what the email address was. So as soon as I heard the address, my stomach leapt into my throat. I told her that was not Bob's email address and that was not his bank. And I will never forget the tone of voice as I heard her say, "Oh my God, I will call you back." And as soon as the word "back" came out of her mouth, she hung up. So at that point, what do you do? You know, we talked earlier, I'm new-ish. I've never been through that before. So I called my attorney and I wanted to know what was going on. You know, who's liable for that if that happens? And then I immediately called Bob back to let him know that it sounded like we had a case of wire fraud and that I discussed it with my attorney to find out what we need to do next. But imagine having to tell someone at nearly 80 years of age that $100,000 of their hard-earned money had been illegally diverted to the wrong bank by someone who made up an email address and pretended to be them.
Especially when they're already completely overwhelmed by this whole process, and the whole idea of moving is daunting for young people, much less older folks who it's just a whole different experience.
Yes. So, you know, at that point, there's a special place in hell reserved for people that would even think of stealing from the elderly. So, you know, my attorney made it clear to me that it comes out of the title office's hide one way or another, and they're liable for the loss. So there's a lot of back and forth communication, but at 8 o'clock at night that evening, you know, we're still going back and forth. The owner of the title office informed me that the wire couldn't be stopped. It did go through. And we didn't have confirmation of whether the money would be returned to them. So we were really on hold. I was physically sick. I can only imagine how they felt. And I'll never forget the tone of voice, you know, just hearing that the life had been sucked out of them. I may have slept 15 minutes that night. I don't know if they slept at all. So after 13 hours and 4 minutes of waiting, and yes, it was literally that length of time, I got the call Friday morning that the wire ended up being rejected and the money was returned to the title office's account.
So that's the luckiest thing ever.
Yes. And the reason that happened, and I don't know, you know, if you've never been through it, maybe you don't realize, but when a wire goes through, the name on the wire, in theory, is supposed to match the name on the account into which it's being deposited. And in this case, that didn't happen. So the title office's lending institution, their fraud department, was communicating with the fraud department at that other big bank. And that between that and the names not lining up, it worked to their advantage. The owner of the title office actually hand-delivered a check to them for the closing on their condo, and they were able to close successfully. What ended up happening, we learned after the fact, was that one of the emails in the transaction was hacked. And that's how this scumbag or whoever it was ended up getting all of their information, deposes them. They went so far, Lee, as to call the title office to verify that the wire had been sent. This scumbag called them.
That takes a special amount of confidence and courage to.
Oh, geez.
Well, I want to know, did the attorney ever acknowledge any culpability in this? Because you brought it up at the closing table that your people were expecting a check and you got blown off. Did that ever come back up?
No, they let that one go.
Have you used that attorney since?
Well, because the buyer chooses the title office in Ohio, and I don't know how that works in every state, but in Ohio, typically the buyer would make that choice. That's where we went to close. I have had other closings with that institution since, and I do know that they've changed their process on wires. You know, coincidentally, April 6th, Ohio is changing its good funds law. And any dollar amount over $1,000 that has to be brought to closing has to be done by wire. So it's all very timely that all of this is coming about. It's something that we're all scrambling to adjust to. the issue is, what process do you have in place to verify when you get an email that the person who sent that email is who they say they are?
Well, that's what I'm thinking. If there's going to be a new state law that directs more wires to happen, what safeguards are they going to put in place to ensure that it's not going to lead to more wire fraud? Because it's a growing issue in the whole industry.
It is. And the Ohio Land Title Association was a driver of this legislation that, again, is going into effect in 7-8 short days here. Most title offices are very, very thorough, and they have great operating procedures in place for how they handle that. But it doesn't eliminate the risk totally. Their logic behind this.
These hackers are getting smarter and smarter. They just adapt their techniques to fit the moment and the parties involved.
Yes, they do. Yeah, they claim that there's issues with checks, and that checks are... there's fraudulent money orders and fraudulent cashier's checks being exchanged. And I have to believe that's in bigger markets. We may be insulated from that here. But clearly, wire fraud is not something that is only found in big markets. So if you think, if you're practicing real estate in a small community, in a micropolitan, to use our buzzword of the day, or anywhere really, you're not immune to it. It can happen anywhere. And you've got to protect your client's information as much as you can.
So if we look at the highlights of what happened here, there's so much opportunity for a consumer to understand that as realtors, this is why we have to continue going to educational classes and stay up to speed in our industry, because just having a license and selling some houses doesn't mean you understand what's happening when we have wire fraud issues that hit the industry, and how do we respond as realtors so that we can protect our consumers, and, you know, how does the federal fund system work? There's all these little pieces. So it's why it's even more critical, if you're a consumer listening to this, that you ask your realtor, when's the last time you took a class, and are you up to speed on the latest drama in the industry? Because this is so much more than anybody ever understands about what we do.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons when we come, you know, we talk about CE. I know Ohio requires 30 hours every 3 years. I do about 30 hours a year on my own, just because it's one of these things I want to be up on.
Right, because who else is going to take care of elderly clients except you? Because it takes a different level of care to take care of elderly clients, because they're often in their homes for a long time. The move is scary. Their kids and grandkids are very busy, and they generally lean on us to be their support during a process like this, and then to get hit with something like wire fraud. I mean, they were probably primarily concerned about what to unpack and what to throw away, and didn't have the space to put this stress in their lives.
Exactly. Exactly. This was very unnecessary stress.
So if anybody's listening to the show and they need a professional realtor who's so much above and beyond what is the bare requirement in Ohio, and they need to know more about the growth in the micropolitan bubble that is out there near Toledo, which, by the way, when I hear Toledo, all I can think of is Klinger from MASH, and I don't know if that's just me. But anyway, how could people find you, Brian?
Well, in Findlay, Ohio, because we are our own little area, they could call 419-701-4040. And you can also visit our website at sellingfindlay.com. That's Findlay.
And if you were driving down the road while you listened to this, or you were sweating to the oldies, never fear, because all of Brian's contact information will be in the show notes for this episode. So you can reach out to him for any of your real estate needs in his area of Ohio. But I would also wager that if you need something in an area that's not his, he could help hook you up with some amazing professional in other parts of the state too. Brian, thank you so much for coming on the show and giving us a real life example of A, why you go to closing, B, why you hold extra hands for your elderly clients, and C, why you stay up to speed so that you can not sleep when it hits you and it's not just a story in the newsletter.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lee.
And so if you're a realtor, broker, investor, inspector, lender, or a consumer who's got your own crazy story to sell, give me a shout on Twitter at Lee Brown or any of the social networks, and we'll feature you on a future episode. In the meantime, subscribe for more so you can be entertained, shocked, and dismayed, and sometimes lifted up by the crazy shit in real estate. And I'll see y'all next time. Thanks
for joining us this week on the Crazy Shit in Real Estate podcast. If you liked what you heard, please visit crazyshitinrealestate.com, where you can access the full show notes for this episode, additional content produced exclusively for listeners, and much, much more.